I'm Damon Bolte, host of The Speakeasy. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Thanks for tuning in to the Heritage Radio Network. We are coming to you, as always, from the back of Roberta's Pizza here in Bushwick, Brooklyn. And today we are joined in the studio by Chef Rick Moonen. He is out from Vegas here in New York City, helping us kick off Sustainable Seafood Week, which jumps off tomorrow, June 22nd. Welcome to the studio, Chef.
Thanks, Aaron. Great to be here.
So, Las Vegas fish guy, you're a fish guy in a desert. How did that happen?
Well, I was approached when I was in New York City to consider opening up a restaurant in Mandalay Bay, and they wanted to start to do some different concepts, you know. So they wanted to bring seafood into the spectrum of restaurants that were in Las Vegas already. And so they made me an offer I couldn't refuse. What are you going to do? You know, they built me a 17,000 square foot space, you know, and put a lot of money into it and slap my name on it. And so it's been a lot of fun. And because, you know, sustainability and being responsible and celebrating the privilege that we get of procuring great products from our world, I took with me. I mean, that's something that I was doing in New York before I went out to Las Vegas. And it continues, you know, and people are very surprised. You know, here's a city or a town that's not supposed to be there in the first place, you know. But it actually has a bigger impact, you know. And as long as you do it deliciously and, I'm always trying to add some diversity, you know, trying to get people to step outside their comfort zone a little bit and try some seafood that they normally wouldn't order, you know, other than salmon and tuna. You know, it's the two top sellers. You know, we sell those as well, but, you know, from sources that we know are not being overexploited, and the fish are still healthy population-wise. And, you know, and it's just a ton of fun.
Yeah, I would say there's something to me. I made my first trip to Vegas, I think, 2 years ago, and I would never have anticipated that Vegas would be my, like, a place that I would enjoy, but I had so much fun. And the food scene there is fascinating to me. And one of the things, and you kind of touched on this, it's so big. The restaurants are so big. The covers, you know, it's like you're moving so much product. So your potential to kind of have an impact on producers as just a really big buyer, it's definitely like a different situation. How does fish get to you?
Well, by plane, by truck. You know, a lot of it comes from L.A., you know, I was a chef in Manhattan for many, many years. You know, no one ever questioned the freshness of the seafood that you served. And it'd take you 2 hours minimum to get a piece of tuna from Long Island into New York. It takes an hour from L.A. to fly into McCarran Airport. We get deliveries every single day. And the products are really, really top quality like anywhere else.
And what was like the kind of seafood scene when you arrived, and how has that kind of evolved?
It was almost non-existent.
Yeah,
you know, it was a very meat and potatoes town. You know, buffets and all you can eat for less than $20, and that's changed tremendously. You know, there's a lot of 3-star Michelin French chefs running the high end restaurants in Las Vegas since the recession. High end restaurants, you know, the fancy restaurants, kind of like had to back down, especially like independent owners like myself. I had a fine dining seafood concept upstairs, and downstairs was more of our casual, and I had to reconceptualize that, you know. So now I'm doing more, you know, mixology and comfort foods upstairs, and we're doing very well with it. So it's just amazing, you know. I work for so many French chefs, and, you know, you had to, and I watched them, you know, hold on to their standards and, you know, and their cuisine, and I watched them close one by one, you know, in New York. I mean, when I entered into the food scene in New York, it was 1978, 79.
Right.
And it was all French restaurants. I mean, if you wanted to go work in a fine dining restaurant, you were going to a French restaurant.
Well, I think that, I mean, that evolution of kind of like restaurants and what people are eating, I think really mirrors, I think a lot of the conversations you're having around seafood, because I know when you got started, the conversations around like what fish we could and couldn't eat, I mean, that wasn't part of the dialogue.
No. I was the pain in the neck. You know, I started with in the arena of seafood, I was on, well, I became sort of the poster child for Give Swordfish a Break. You know, there was a C-Web in the NRDC, the National Resource Defense Council, put together this campaign to raise awareness that the North Atlantic swordfish was, you know, if we didn't change the way that we were catching it and consuming it, that it was going to be commercially extinct within the next 5 years. And I saw that, you know, as I would go to the Fulton Fish Market. We used to be able to buy gigantic swordfish, 200-pound and up, called double markers, you know. And then more and more, what you saw were what they called pups, which were below 100 pounds. And the reason they call it a pup is because it's not even sexually mature yet. So it just made, you know, normal sense. I mean, if you had, you know, some common sense within you, you'd say, there's a problem here.
Yeah.
You know? So luckily, that campaign was extremely successful. First time that chefs really got involved as spokespersons, you know, taking a stance, taking it off their menus and actually stating the reason why. And nationally, people started to hear that and they started to pull back from consuming and purchasing it, and it made a huge impact. You know, there was regulatory changes now and closures and a lot different as far as how they create their quotas, and the population has rebounded and it's now deemed to be a sustainable fishery again, which is awesome.
Yeah, well, kudos. Also, I think, too, kind of indicative of the power of chefs by creating a great dish or putting a fish on a menu, like, you know, It's a big stick. So there is some, like, exercising some caution there.
Yeah, we're seen as the gatekeepers, you know, and I think the voice of the chef started to evolve. I mean, in 1994 when, you know, the Food Network started, you know, and that's when all of a sudden people started to take a much more keen interest in the fluorescent and stainless world of the chef, you know.
the glamour of the kitchen lights.
Well, just look at the explosion of shows. There's cooking shows and competitions and throwdowns and pop-ups and all kinds of crazy stuff. I mean, I never thought, you know, in my mind, I'm still 25, and I'm going to be 59 this year. So, I mean, you know, I'm not young anymore. And I look at the new generation and the millennials, and I just hope that we can have a deeper and stronger impact so that they really, really embrace the idea of sustainability more.
Well, it's one of the things I was looking at your website, and you call out five types of fish: salmon, tuna, cod, snapper, and bass. And mm-hmm. if we kind of continue on our current path, these fish will be extinct by 2048. And I feel like the seafood conversation in many ways is kind of like the climate conversation, where we all are kind of like, oh my God, it's just too much, I can't deal. And you like stick your head in the sand. So how do you not stick your head in the sand? Like, how do you like deal with this on a day-to-day basis? Like, what keeps you kind of moving forward?
Well, it's kind of like reading a paper. It could change. Like, we can have a conversation right now and tomorrow could be, an evolutionary change where it's either a better story, a better, news report or worse one, you know. So make it delicious, make it fun, hip it out, you know. And that's really what is starting to happen more and more, which is great, because there's a lot of people that have gone in and out of my kitchens over the 37 years I've been, you know, cooking, and they're now chefs, and they're making decisions based upon what they learned as they went through my kitchen and other like-minded chefs. And it used to be just a small handful of chefs that really cared enough to do it and to make a statement about it as they did it. And you know, we're eating more, we're eating lower on the food chain, you know, when it comes to seafood, which is fantastic. You know, you see more anchovies and sardines and herring and mackerel, and you know, and people saw that it was bait fish, but you know, and even more local fish. I mean, even in New York, you know, you had the porgies and towtog or blackfish, and you know, and that's regionally, you know, apparent no matter where you are. I mean, if you're in Florida, you know, grouper. Okay, well, I heard grouper's bad, but not every grouper. You know, and there's certain organizations that are doing it better. There's a Gulf Wild program where they're more of a catch share, you know, where the fishermen are taking a piece of the fishery, and they get the quota, and they don't have to go fishing just on the time where the government deems the season is open and closed. And the fisheries are a lot more healthy. They're catching a when the demand is correct, so they're getting a better price, and we as chefs are getting a better product, and the fisheries are recovering because they're not destroying the environment as they're going after them. It's not just this derby. You know, you can imagine, you know, you've got generations of people in a specific fishery, and now all of a sudden you're told, okay, the quota this year is X, 20,000 tons, okay, which, you know, sounds like a lot, but
sure.
it's not that much when you're you know, distributing it worldwide. And you know, you'd have to go from the beginning of August to the end of August, and that's it. You know, and we're going to figure it out if we can extend that season depending on how many are actually caught. And now they can just do it when, and you know, that could be the stormiest month of the year. It doesn't matter. You still have to go out on your boat because you have to make your money. You have to pay your bills.
Sure.
And everything suffers as a result. And certain fisheries doing experimental, changes where the fishermen are involved. They own part of the business. There's a government regulator, observers on the boat, making sure that they're doing it right. Because we all know, at least twice a year, you get that big article that comes out that everything's a fraud.
Yeah.
You know, no matter what you think you're buying, it's actually being mislabeled. You go into a sushi house, they say it's bluefin tuna. It's really a high tuna, or be it what it is. And so that's created a lot of, like, consumer, unrest.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, you know, facepalming, like, constantly. You're just like, I don't even know. And I think, again, for me, when I get involved in these conversations, it, like, spirals into this place where I'm, like, filled with panic. I'm like, oh, how do I deal with it? And then I'm like, wait, it's actually not that complicated. It's just buy food from people you know.
That's right. Get to know your sources better. And here in Brooklyn, you know, this is what I love about Brooklyn. You have fish stores, you've got meat stores, you've got a coffee store, you've got, you know, everything, you know, and that's, you know, just it's reminiscent of how it used to always be. You know, you don't just go into these massive supermarkets and just, you know, buy all sorts of stuff and you don't know what the heck you're buying anymore.
Well, so kind of on that same note of, you know, as a frontline consumer feeling kind of confused and kind of looking for guidance, you know, there's a lot of different opinions around kind of what is sustainable and what makes sense. And I know that you do a lot of work with True North Salmon,
mm-hmm.
And they are farm raising salmon. And a lot of folks are like, oh, farm raising is like not the way to go. So why is that a good space for you?
Well, I too was a member of the voice that said farm raised salmon was bad. And you know what? First of all, let's understand aquaculture or farm raising, same thing. It's fairly new. You know, and very necessary. More than half of what we consume globally right now comes from farms, and I don't think that's going to change. You know, we've done a really good job of overfishing the most popular species.
Right.
There's a lot out there that aren't popular. That if we could diversify our diet, it would take the pressure off of those wild species to come back. But in the world of aquaculture, a lot of changes have been made over the last 5 to 10 years. You know, they've learned, you know, because there's you know, when you put a lot of fish, a large concentration of fish in a small area, there's a lot of stress. You know, imagine packing the heck out of an elevator.
Yeah, like any population.
And the guy in the back sneezes and everybody's sick, you know. So that same type of thing is going to happen when there's a stressed out situation. And so antibiotics have to be used in the feed in order to keep them healthy and protect your investment. Escapes happen. You know, they get out and all of a sudden you've got all these fish that didn't really belong in that area in the first place competing for food that the fish that belong there in the first place need to survive. It creates an imbalance in the ecosystem. And for me, that's really what it's all about. Maintaining a healthy environment creates good food, you know, healthy water, healthy fish. And certain companies like True North have really made some major investments and have made a lot of changes in the way that they do things. You know, parasites or not parasites, but, you know, sea lice, which is natural,
yeah.
You know, in the cycle of a fish's life. But because you have so many of them in a concentrated area, you have more of an infestation, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
And how do you deal with that when it happens? It doesn't happen all the time.
Sure.
But in certain years or certain conditions, all of a sudden, boom, you got a bunch of sea lice. What are you going to do? Well, they used to use chemicals to get rid of them. You know, it's like a pesticide. You know, it's called slice. But it gets rid of sea lice, which are crustaceans, and it also has an effect on lobsters and
sure.
everything else. So now they're like, I mean, and you know, back when they first realized that, you know, oh, we got sea lice. Oh, my goodness, what are we going to do about it? You know, it was the only thing available. You know, it's like, oh, let, you know, you go online, check out what you got to get. Okay, buy a bunch of that. Let's use it and get rid of it. And so they did and found out, oh, we just killed off half of the lobster population in the area as well.
What?
But now they use, like, well boats, which is a boat that's, you know, filled with a low concentration of hydrogen peroxide. And they'll swim the fish through it, and all the sea lice will fall off, and they go back into the, you know, the little pen that they're being raised in, and they're fine. You know, and there's no chemicals being used whatsoever, and there's no impact on the environment because the amount of H2O2, it's just, you know, it's basically oxygen, you know, going into the ozone, all good. And so smarter, more thought out ways. And the funny thing, that this is what blows my mind, but it, you know, the new technology is study what nature does and emulate it. You know, so they're and so next to these fish farms, they're growing kelp, and they're farming kelp, and they're farming mussels next to that. Super healthy because of the lot of nutrients come out of the byproducts of the farming. You know, that used to be so concentrated that it would have a negative effect on the environment, and now the kelp feeds off of the byproduct and then the mussels, et cetera. And it's called integrated multi-trophic aquaculture, different layers of the food chain feeding off of each other, creating a much more healthy ecosystem. Brilliant. You know, what took you so long to figure out that you just can't muscle Mother Nature into, you know, to a business, you know?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, I'm like still sitting here thinking, I'm like 50% of the fish that we're eating is farmed. I'm like, That's a big number. So I think, too, when you're thinking about where to kind of drive the conversation and you want to be in a reality-based space, you're like, if half of it is like this, then like making fish farms better has to be part of the conversation.
Exactly. And, you know, we're going from 7 billion to 9 billion. It's got, and I was always of the mentality, you know, support the small farmer, you know, go to the farmer's markets and do that. That's not going to feed billions of people. You know, it's got to be a bigger and more broad-minded, you know, solution. And so large companies like, you know, like Cook Aquaculture, where their brand is True North, which is their fresh line of salmon, and it's really super high quality. And it's Atlantic salmon, farm-raised in the Atlantic Ocean, in the Bay of Fundy, which is the Gulf of Maine up into Canada, the highest tides in the world, deep water, super cold, you know, and when a generation of salmon are raised, then they allow that farm in that area to go fallow for a year to allow it to recuperate and get and stay healthy. So there's a lot of very warm, fuzzy, beautiful things going on, producing delicious fish that's fresh, affordable. Salmon is the number one selling fin fish around the world, so that gives people a lot of comfort. And because there's so many different layers to the considerations on what makes it sustainable and what's not and what's going on. So farming used to be done a lot more slipshod, a little more poorly, but big companies have said, you know, well, they're giving us a black eye, you know, they meaning like Seafood Watch out of the Monterey Bay Aquarium, which I'm
as they should. Yeah,
agreed. And I'm glad to see that the big companies are listening to that and adjusting and doing a much, much better job. You know, I feel like I'm the Trojan chef going into these big corporations because I've always had that David and Goliath thing. I was knocked down the big guys. They're really destroying our world. And in many ways, certain areas are. But in the aquaculture industry, specifically True North Salmon, they're doing a much, 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 much better job. And I want to applaud it because if we don't support it, then where are we going?
We're not incentivizing. Well, I think I know that you're doing a dinner tomorrow night. I know Paul Greenberg is going to be there. And I'm thinking a lot about his book, American Catch. And one of the learnings I took away from that book was when you're thinking about supporting individual fishermen or fisheries, that one of the things you're supporting in that space is not just that fisherman, but the whole kind of regional economic infrastructure of those kind of coastal communities and all the auxiliary businesses that support them and the kind of culture, history, heritage of those spaces too. So I do want to emphasize that, and I don't think you're saying it's not like one or the other, but both, but maybe that's not what you're saying. I don't know.
No, I agree with you 100%. And you know, when there's someone that's doing a great job, and then we support them, and they become a successful business model. All the other fisheries, all the other fishermen and everything else, they're all looking at each other. They're all checking out what Johnny's doing down the block. And if Johnny's doing really well, then maybe we should do what Johnny's doing. And that's exactly what I want to see happen. At the end of the day, I'm a chef. I want to have a consistent supply of great products that I can present to my guests in a creative way. And then I can go home and be happy, you know. But unfortunately, it doesn't always go that simply. You know, there's you know, the future generations aren't going to be able to taste what I've tasted when I was a kid. And even now, I mean, we could do hours of discussion about a peach, a strawberry, anything, that, you know, asparagus, you know, the produce that's available 12 months of the year that just, you're not supposed to. You know, yeah. Christmas is once a year. There's a reason for it. It's a lot of fun. You can build up to it. You can celebrate it and then wait for the next year.
Wait for the next. Well, one of the things I want to touch on, because I think this is another item that comes up in the fishing and the fish conversation more and more, is invasive species. Mm-hmm. And, you know, chefs, we should be looking at trash fish dinners, eating invasive species, like using the plate to other environmental ends. I just want to get your take on that.
Well, I mean, as far as trash fish, that's basically what I'm saying is eat more diversely. Eat lower on the food chain. People say trash. I like it.
Bad name, guys. Whoops.
Well, you know, I like it and I don't like it, because if you go to a trash fish dinner and you eat it and you say, holy smokes, that was freaking delicious. You know, I need to wink at them. Yeah, trash. You know, it's not trash.
Yeah.
Everything has its merit. If it's put in the hands of someone that can just look at it and create a dish that's delicious, it's not trash. It's the next popular. I mean, lobster. Ooh, everybody's, lobster's the greatest thing. It used to be served to prisoners. You know, it was a bug of the ocean that was washing up on shores. It was disgusting. Give it to the guys in the jail cells.
I know. I read that there was like servant contracts where they were like, the servants will be fed lobster no more than four times a week.
Yeah. I'm like, well, what? Yeah, it was twice a week. Yeah, there was some sort of decree that went down that you're not allowed, because they were complaining about it.
Yeah.
You know, now today you can, you know, lobster's like one of the most luxurious things that you can put your hands on. In the world of invasive species, you know, this is just another prime example of how we don't respect the environment, you know, and how scorpion fish ended up in the waters of the Southeast. Who knows? You know, there's speculation that someone let out an aquarium, or there was a flood or something, and they got into the environment. It doesn't matter. We have to just be smarter about how we respect our world. You know, take a step back, put your toys away at the end of the night. You can play with them again tomorrow. It's not that difficult, you know, and you don't have to have a master's degree in order to be able to do it. You know, just read the news, learn more about where your food comes from. Ask, what is that fish? Where did it come from? And how was it caught, or how was it farmed? And when you start to learn a little bit more and more and more, then you're going to become more in sync with the ecosystem, with our environment, with the source of everything that we get to celebrate every day.
So, you know, obviously you're out here for Sustainable Seafood Week. Why are weeks like this important?
Well, first of all, they didn't exist, you know, when I was at Voice, you know, 20 years ago, you know, with Give Swordfish a Break. Why is it important? Because like any other holiday, like anything else, it just needs to be reinforced as a mentality that hopefully will carry you through the next 51 weeks until we do it again next year. And without having these festivals, these celebrations, these dinners, I think it just goes away. People forget. They go on to the next thing. You know, we're very busy. We have very busy lives. We're, you know, constantly checking away with our little devices in our pockets, our phones and our cameras. So, and when you can celebrate how delicious our world can really be, and that it's something that maybe you don't normally eat, hopefully it'll help you to help everyone to have a better comfort with ordering outside their comfort zone.
Yeah, and plus I have to imagine it's nice for you to kind of get to hang with some pals and like have a chat, have a laugh, cook some good food.
Exactly. I mean, New York's my hometown. You know, I was here for 25 years. I've been in Las Vegas 10 now. But I still consider New York my home, you know, so I get excited. I vibrate when I get into the city. So
well, welcome back, Chef.
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for joining us. If folks want to find out more about Sustainable Seafood Week here in New York, and they are taking it national this year, so lots more to come, definitely check them out at sswnational.com. Thank you so much for listening. This has been another report from the Heritage Radio Network. This show, like all 39 of our weekly programs, is available for free. Check out our website, www.heritageradionetwork.org. You can also find us on iTunes or Stitcher. Thank you so much for listening. Stay tuned in.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us with questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.